Claude Simius, this is your first podcast, I feel like. I mean, you were just telling me this
It
is your
is
first.
my very, very first podcast. Yes.
How do you feel about this, man?
I feel good. I feel no, I feel like it's gonna be a fun experience. I think, the fact that we're friends outside of this, like we've had a lot of these conversations before, so I think that's easier. But I'm a little nervous, I guess. But it's all good.
Thank you for being vulnerable. It's all good. I mean, I've done almost probably more than 150 episodes, and I always get nervous before doing them. And I feel like a little bit of nervousness is still good because it kind of shows that you care about
You care,
something.
right?
Exactly.
You'd have to be like not mentally right to not be slightly nervous. But yeah, I'm excited. It should be fun.
Thanks for doing this,
Of
man.
course.
Very fond, of course. And I told you before we started recording, there's so many ways we can take this. I just wanted to start off by asking, are you the mayor of Chicago yet? Is this
Look, I am not the mayor. I have zero political aspirations. That work looks like hell, and I don't want any part of it. No, I'm not. I'm very much not. It's not a dream that I have at all.
maybe mayor of the people.
It would be more like a nightmare, to be honest.
For those wondering who aren't in Chicago, of course, folks in the Chicago tech scene, I feel like by now know who Claude Simius is. For those who don't, though, I guess my quick version of who you are, of course, other than being a friend of mine, you're a product manager and you have been a product manager owner at various startups, I think four, that you were a part of. You've co-founded, I think, two or three startups yourself.
They've all failed, which they've all failed, by the way. They did not become successful.
A lot of lessons learned, which we'll cover. And now you're at P33, which is a nonprofit focused on really heightening inclusivity within Chicago's tech ecosystem. Is that fair to say?
That's my career so far, yeah.
On LinkedIn, though, your tagline is interesting because I feel like you changed it recently and it's doing things.
Right.
What, and I guess where I wanted to start, especially in your career, is, how have you navigated your career? Like, where do those decisions come from in terms of what startups you want to join and where you want to sort of take things?
Yeah, I think if I, whenever I look at my career, it's like the next best thing always comes from a place of something that did not work out or a place of failure, honestly. I started like post high school, I started a company which did not work out. But that same angel investor who backed me, Brian Dorson, ended up hiring me at his startup. At that point, I would think I was employee number one outside of the co-founders. This app called, at the time, was called Orchard, which is an app that helps you cultivate your relationships. So, like, if you have a friend you haven't reached out to in a long time, would say, "Hey, you haven't reached out to so and so, time to catch up," or something like that. So, to me, that was really interesting company, really interesting product. And Brian is just one of those people that, career-wise, who believed in me more than anybody else, who put his name on the line, put his money on the line on me. So, but we ended up, doing that company. We got accepted to Y Combinator. I moved to the West Coast to be part of that for 4 months. I was living in Los Altos, which is like a suburbs of San Francisco. It's like in the middle of Silicon Valley. And that was one of the best times of my career. I had so much fun doing all that work. And that was from a point of something that I did that did not work out. Then after that, went to another company, which is like a health tech startup, which after working there for a bit, we didn't get FDA approval, and that whole thing ended up shutting down. I think they're making a comeback now, but at the time it was shut down because we were lacking FDA approval. And that led me into the next opportunity that I think, played a huge role of where I'm at now. So it's like the way I've navigated, it's like I've tried things not work out, and on the other side of it, it's always better than what I've expected. And I think that's been the main way I've been navigating, just trying things I'm interested in and problems that I care about and building relationships with people that I care about. And I think that's the second point when it comes to my career, like beyond just taking risks, which is not really that risky, because like when you're young, you don't have, you know, your failures only affect you. They don't really affect other people, like your career failures. So, you know, don't affect a spouse or kids or anything like that. It's not that risky in the grand scheme of things. But I think on the other side of it, like building relationships has been probably like the most important thing that's helped me navigate all of that. I have some great, great people in the community that are farther than I am, far richer than I am, far smarter than I am, that I rely on for advice and counsel whenever I'm thinking what I want to do next. You know, if I'm having a rough season in my career, they help me navigate of like, how do you become better? Or if I'm having a good season, they help me navigate like, how do you become even better from that? And they're kind of like my own personal board of directors. Build cultivating those relationships ever since I was like in high school. So when it comes to that, I think that's been instrumental to, you know, all the things I've done, but just building the right relationships.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, you know, relationships, of course, I regard you as a very close friend, not just in the sort of tech ecosystem, but even outside of that. And I think that's kind of how we started. Yeah. It wasn't really as a direct link to that. I was thinking, you know, when I asked you to do the podcast, I was thinking about one of your like superpowers, right? And I often think about that with people I meet or I'm friends with. What stood out to me the most about getting to know you better is not necessarily just your ability to make relationships, grow a community, bring people together. I think that's what people see on the sort of quickly on the outside. To me, what stood out the most was your ability to stay who you are, regardless of who you are in front of, which, you know, I think me saying that is maybe light, but I think, and people who know you understand this a bit better, but I'll give you a quick example for those who don't know Claude as intimately. You'll show up to an event, you know, and you're a big sneakerhead, we'll talk about that, but you'll show up and like, you know, you got Jordans on, you show up to a podcast, you got bling on, and that's part of who you are, man. It's part of your character, but it's also very, very hard to do. What is your approach and mindset for folks who want to be more authentic in terms of giving that kind of advice?
Yeah, well, there was a point in my life where I wasn't like that, where I was trying to fit in with other people. I came here 10 years ago from Haiti. I think it was 11 years ago now, immigrated here to the U.S. I went to an all-white high school and middle school. I think it was like 98% white, and I obviously not white. It was a mostly rich area, and I was not rich, very poor actually. Most of the time we were under the poverty line. And I think I went through a phase of my life where I'm like seeing all these things and be like, oh, I want to be like that. I want to be like this person or that person, and just comparing myself to other people, which is not a great thing to do, but I did have that phase once in a while. It's just a very uncomfortable way to live your life. I've learned that it takes a lot of work to keep your persona, just mentally, internally. It takes a lot of work. It can be draining. It can be emotionally draining, physically draining. I figured for my own life, it's so much easier and better to be myself and be around people that who allows me to be myself, who don't judge me for it. It's been the greatest cheat code, I think, from an emotional standpoint. I surround myself with friends that are, you know, who are not toxic, who are, you know, I tend to live my life in a very drama-less way. There's probably zero drama in my life, and I have to thank my friends for that and my relationships, because, you know, they're all level-headed people. But all that to say, to back your question, you know, when I'm at an event, or I'm at a tech event, or I'm meeting with investors, or you know the governor. Even in any room that I'm at, I try my best to stay who I am, because it doesn't take work to be who you are. And I think people appreciate the authenticity. I think people tend to gravitate towards people who are real. And the more that I can be, the more that I think it's helpful to me just internally. It doesn't even matter like what it looks like on the outside, just internally, it's just a lot more peaceful. And I enjoy that peace. I truly do.
Yeah. And I guess from one, you know, young individual to another, and obviously you're younger, but I'm 24, right? The reason I bring up age is it's so critical, yet so difficult to have that self-awareness. You know, you read about it in books and blogs and articles, and you have roadmaps, but I feel like even for me, when I go to execute and find that path for me to figure out who I actually am, which is difficult, right? I mean, it's an easy question to ask, like, who is Claude Simius, right? What defines you? But I feel like that question, if you really sort of parse it out, it's like, whoa, it's like a truck almost hit you in the face, you know?
Right.
So what sort of things did you do to help build that self-awareness?
Yeah, I think, so self-awareness is one of those things that I care for in people, whether it's friends or people I just associate with. Personally, it's a skill that I've cultivated. Honestly, I think I had to grow up a lot quicker. Like I said, coming to a whole new country, don't know the language, don't know anyone, don't understand the culture, don't have any friends here, and like you have no money, you have to grow up. You don't have a normal teenage years. You don't. So you have to grow up quicker. And I think that's where it came from. And I think that's part of it, just like that transition from Haiti to here. And I didn't want to be another story about coming here and then do crazy things and then, you know, get in trouble and stuff like that. So I think a lot of it came from the fact that I knew, like, the sacrifices that my parents made for us to be here. I had to start focusing on the things that matter long-term, very early, which, you know, I probably missed out on a few fun things that teenagers do, but I'm grateful for the life I have now and all the things that I get to do now. But I think that's part of it. It's just like that whole transition of being an immigrant when you're like 11 or 12 years old, it helps you. I feel like it's either like throws you off completely and you become completely useless to society, or you know, it helps you grow up, you know, a lot quicker and becoming a very self-aware person and become a responsible adult. So I think that's part of it. I think the other part is, honestly, like, you know, having good parents, like my mom and my dad, it's like they're crucial to who I am today. Because like that's truly the luckiest thing I can happen to, I feel like, because you don't choose them. You choose everything else. I guess you don't choose your parents. You don't choose your siblings,
or where you're born as well.
Or where you're born, but having good parents, you know, feeling loved and unconditional love, I think has been the thing that's like given me a lot of internal peace as an adult, and I thank God for it. I thank them for it. I think that's probably the key of it. It's just like growing up, I never had to wonder like, do my parents love me? Do they, you know, it's something unconditional love that I've had, you know, ever since I was a kid. And I think that's helped me become a very secure adult.
Yeah. I mean, parents are so pivotal. And you're a classic example of that, right? Aside from wealth, or maybe infrastructure around you, you know, having to immigrate, aside from all of those challenges, if you have loving parents who really want the best for you, you know, the likelihood is you're going to turn out all right. Who knows, like, what the exact scenarios are? And I see this a lot through Maria, who, you know, my fiance in psychology. Like, that's always one of the biggest challenges kids have. If, you know, their parents are distant or they grow up in a very troubled household, it's a big challenge to overcome. I wanted to go to one area, which I don't know if you feel this sometimes, but I consider myself, obviously I'm a Canadian citizen, but nonetheless, I immigrated to Canada, right? I wasn't born in Canada. And I always, you know, given that most of my family live in the Middle East, I still kind of bear sometimes guilt because I feel like I've been given a position of privilege, let's say, and you constantly have to make something out of it. Do you sometimes bear that, knowing that, you know, you're in a position where you're constantly trying to create something because you know that there are family members who would, you know, fight to be where you're at?
I don't know if I live with it every day, but I understand how lucky I am to be here, and I don't want to waste it. And if I do understand that, and I think that's part of the drive of like why I want to do so many things is because I understand that it's, you know, not everyone has that opportunity. And if I'm able to live in the U.S. and be an American citizen and do all these things, that's such a cheat code in life, just being in the U.S. And I don't live with guilt. I don't live with that. I don't have that guilt, but I do recognize how lucky I am to be here, and I don't want to waste it. I don't want to waste the opportunity. So, but no, I don't think I have the guilt, but I just simply recognize that I'm lucky to be here and I don't want to waste the opportunity. And life, you only have this one thing, right? You only have like live it once. So I really want to, I don't want to live with regret and like wish I had tried this, wish I had done that. You know, so I want to make sure that I accomplish as much as I can as possible.
Yeah. I mean, the gratitude part, I think, is a better way to put it. I heard this thing recently on a podcast, JRE's podcast, and it was basically saying that luck is the residue of design. And they're two different things, right? Privilege, to your point earlier, is like, well, you know, you don't choose your parents. But let's say even in the country that you're born, that's the residue of design, because let's say if, you know, your ancestors come from Africa or the Middle East, and now you're all of a sudden born in the U.S., the luck that you have is also the residue of the design of your ancestors who 100%. Brought you there. But to me, it was also very kind of motivational. I'm like, well, forward looking, all the choices you make will also be the residue of design for future generations.
Right.
Right?
Right. 100%. No, very well put. And also like decisions of your parents.
Correct.
You know, like they have impacts on you, negative or positive. So it goes back generations for sure.
Parents, I know to you, mean a lot, right? And I guess it's part of your culture, the sort of tradition. It's sort of ingrained. What other things did you sort of leverage coming from Haiti to the U.S. that you feel like make you a more successful person?
I think we enjoyed the little things. Like whenever I'm thinking back of like things I enjoyed as a kid, it wasn't like, you know, fancy vacations because we couldn't afford those. It wasn't, waking up on Christmas and having like an Xbox under the tree or something like that. I think like whenever I look back, it's always those little moments that we had a lot of fun with, like playing soccer in the neighborhood, and like really stupid, silly things, small little silly things. Even when like, so in Haiti, whenever it's, you know, it's January 1st, like it's our Independence Day, it's kind of like it's our 4th of July. We'd enjoy pumpkin soup every January 1st. So December 31st is just that night. It's just a night of partying with friends in the neighborhood, and then you enjoy that soup the next morning. And like those are the things that I look back and I'm like, man, like I really enjoyed these moments. Those very small moments. Moments with my brother. Oh man, like growing up and my parents. And like they were not extravagant things. They're very, very small things. And I think coming here, that's helped me focus on also not being distracted and just like enjoys those small moments that I even now enjoy those small moments that I have with friends or like whenever we're catching up, you know, if we enjoy a good meal at RPM or someplace like that. I guess now I probably do some more extravagant things, but back then,
Chicago Bulls.
But yeah, I think, to answer your question, like I think another thing, like growing up in Haiti, that's helped me stay motivated, it's helped me stay focused. It's not worry so much about people doing big things and people doing extravagant things. It's just like, I remember like those small moments I truly enjoyed as a kid. And I try my best to enjoy small moments now, whatever those small moments happen to be. So I think that's another part that was just kind of ingrained in us.
I appreciate that perspective, especially from someone who is doing a lot. And I know you touched a little bit on that, you know, before when we were talking about what motivates you. And for someone who, you know, plays in the startup world, of course, not easy, time consuming, it's challenging. It's a
startup world is so hard. It's so crazy. I don't mean to interrupt, but it's so crazy. Like how it's like so glorified and it's romanticized. And there are the good moments. Life. Right. There are good moments. And I'm grateful for it. I learned a lot. You do, you know, make good money, sometimes make a lot of money. But it's draining, emotionally draining. Every day you wake up, you don't know if the company is going to exist anymore, even as like an early employee. So all that to say, like, startup world is romanticized a lot. It's because people only see the good parts. They don't see the awful, awful, awful parts.
They don't make the headlines.
Yeah, they don't make the headlines.
Agreed. Well, I guess on that topic, I remember, if we're okay going there, I remember, you know, I guess a situation within your personal life, I feel, where you got to a point where, you know, post high school, it was like hustle, hustle, hustle for you. It's like work, grind, like do everything you can to keep building yourself up. And you came to a point, I don't want to say a breaking point, but just a moment of realization where you realized you needed to take a step back to take care of your personal self.
Right.
Before continuing to go there. That's hard to do though, man. Like, again, back to that realization or self-awareness, like looking yourself in the mirror and be like, everything I know about myself, Claude, the go, 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 the getter, right? For me to voice to the world that I need a bit of time off is also not an easy thing. It takes a bit of courage to do that.
Yeah, I had to rest. Like, I was truly burned out by 2020. And I...
By the year itself?
By the year itself. I mean, like, 2020 was such a wild year. And it's funny because, like, in my own personal life, things were fine. My family were healthy. I was healthy. I've never had COVID. No one in my immediate family has had COVID, by the way, still. But it was a wild year. You had a pandemic, an election, racial tension. And like a bunch of, and also big celebrity deaths like Kobe Bryant and things like that. And, you know, I was very lucky my job was not affected by 2020 at all. Like, as a matter of fact, I think like that year I even got a raise. But January of 2021, I realized like, man, like, I had to take some time off. And I think that taught me how to rest. I think it's one thing, and people like us who are like you and me and others who are like in the community, like we talk a lot about like, it's important to work, it's important to build things, and like we all agree on that, but we don't talk enough about like finding the time to unplug and rest. And so I quit my job, went back to Haiti for a few weeks, spent time with my parents, and just like not do anything for like a few months actually. And again, I know like this is a privileged kind of scenario where like I'm making enough money where I can do that, but it taught me a lot about like learning how to unplug, and that's stayed with me now that I kind of understand how to do that.
Do you mind going into some of those, like in terms of the lessons learned while you unplugged? What sort of reflections? Because that was going to be actually a question.
Right. I think a lot of it comes back to where are you putting your self-worth? And I know a lot of my self-worth is tied to my work. And I love my job. I love what I do. I enjoy the rewards of that. So I do think like a lot of us do tie ourselves to our career from a self-worth standpoint. And taking a step back, you kind of realize, no, but like there's other things, like your friends and your personal relationships and your relationship with your sibling and your mom and your dad and things like that. Those are the things that matter long term. And I've learned that it's good to unplug and focus on those things from time to time, because any job that you have, if you die tomorrow, the next few days are going to put that position opened up. I'm sure they'll miss you and things, but they're going to put that up. But if I were to pass in the next few days, like my brother can't get another brother. My parents can't get another son. My friends can't get another Claude. So it's like understanding that to me has helped me a lot to focus on the things that matter. Which is, my friendships and making sure my friendships are healthy, and mentally I'm always in a healthy spot. And I don't think you can have those realizations being in a go world. You really have to take time off to do that. And I think that's what being unplugged has taught me, like focusing on the long term things and the more important things to yourself internally.
It's funny you say that. My mom has another way of saying it, where it doesn't matter how important you are to a company, yeah, or what you end up doing in terms of legacy and all the shit we talk about. She's like, they'll never build a statue for you.
No, right?
meaning that it doesn't matter, what you do. I think this idea of commemoration that they're going to have.
Never.
So it's not necessarily to say don't work hard, but it's don't lose yourself in the process of working hard.
Exactly.
On that note, it's also very easy to have those realizations when you're in Haiti, or like, let's say if you go to Cancun for a week and you're on the beach and you're like, yeah, I'm doing yoga like seven times this week. I'm eating clean. I'm running by the beach. And then you go back to wherever you live and you go back into the routine. And it's so easy to slip back into all those things that got you to that burnt out place to begin with. Are you sort of planning to proactively do some things now so that a bit of that balance is more consistent?
No, I found that balance. I think I found it. It's like, I think there's a difference between like being a founder and being like an employee. Like, when I'm a founder, I know those first few years, like there's no balance in that. So you just have to, you have to go at it. And that's, I understand that. But if you're an employee, it's good to find that balance. And I've found that balance in my own personal life. So like on the weekends, I don't work. Saturday, Sunday, I rest. I spend time with my friends. I go out, check out restaurants, or kick out of my crib, or kick out of my friend's cribs. So I've learned to like just separate these two from like my career and my own personal life, because again, I think those two until like you're on your own company, those two will always be separate. And then other ways that I do that is just travel. Like my vacations, I try to go far and just like spend time with myself, and that's been truly, truly helpful to me.
Well, speaking of separation, good segue, but one of the other things I admire, by the way, I'm not just trying to feed you compliments because we're on a podcast, but, but it is true, man. I speak that genuinely, really. And these are two things I feel like contemplated, when I was just kind of visualizing how I want to go about this podcast. So we talked about the first part to me was your authenticity. The second part is your ability to separate your work brand versus your personal brand. Because it's funny when you say, and of course it's common, like we all somewhat derive some of our value and our worth from our professional life, because they're sort of intertwined, especially if you're a founder, to your point. But I've always seen you as like Claude, not necessarily Claude VP of, or product manager of, or host of. Right? I've always just seen you as Claude. And if someone were to ask me to describe you, obviously the first thing I'd say is, well, he's a friend. Okay, so what does your friend do? Then I can be like, whereas I think some of us can slip into this realm of, oh, Claude, I want to introduce you to, Sarah, who's the VP of XYZ at. How are you able to separate those two?
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. It's a really good point, actually. I, when it comes to like the way I view it, when it comes to like building relationships, I'm at a point now where people, I guess, are coming up to me for like advice on career advice, which is weird. But like what I always say, it's like you have to get to know people for who they are, not what they're getting paid to be. And I think those are very important.
Oh, now preach.
I get paid, when I was a product manager, I got paid to do that. I'm getting paid right now to be director of platform at P33. But I'm not getting paid to be Claude. Like, I'll be Claude for the rest of my life. I won't be at a particular job for the rest of my life, right? So I think it's good to understand what that separation clearly as an adult, as a worker. And so, and that's why I think a lot of people get networking wrong. And I almost never use the word networking. Like,
despise that word.
Right? It's like, it's so transactional. You don't want to see people as opportunities. Like, people are people. And, you know, they're not AVC. They're so-and-so first. And so, like, you don't want to, and, like, it just makes it, you don't want to make people like commodities. Like, they're not transactions. They're people. And so I never want to be that person who's lives and breathes by their work title. Like, I want to be known as myself. And I think that's a good place for people to try to get at. Because once you don't have that title anymore, let's say something happens, you've lost yourself. And I think that's tough. And you don't want to be in that situation. So I think for me, when I view people, I always want to view people as themselves. So what makes them unique? You know, what makes them tick? What do they care about? What are the problems they want to solve in the world? You know, what are the things in the world that, you know, that bothers them? What are the things in the world that excites them? And I think that's oftentimes a good place to start relationships rather than seeing people as simply a title. And I think that's just wrong and probably not helpful.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm really thinking about what you just said, which I like where you went with it, because it was going to be one of my questions. Is, and I remember I shared that post on Twitter, and a lot of the questions I got were, you know, how do you create these ecosystems when you bring people together? I think one of the things, and shout out to Chai Tech IRL, you know, which obviously happy to be partner of.
You're a sponsor, so thank you.
Shout out to you, Abinaya, Tony, and Eric, of course. And for folks who don't know, it's like the place to be if you're in tech or if you're in the startup world.
The best tech parties in Chicago, best way to put them.
That's it. I realized the reason why I like them so much is, I genuinely want to go to this event, right? Yeah. I'm not trying to promo it. I'm being serious in that some events in the past, it's like, you know, I think we've all gone there too. You're out a lot during the week and it's like, oh, just another kind of work event or networking event, because that's sort of how it's branded. When I go to these things, dude, I literally feel like I'm just there to catch up with friends. Friends that are in the ecosystem. And of course, there might be overlap, there might be ways to collaborate. But I think one of the key things you mentioned there is that you see people for themselves. On the flip side of that, I feel like it's sometimes a double-edged sword, because people might now realize the utility of who Claude is. I don't know if you know where I'm going with this, but how do you differentiate between the people who are genuinely appreciative of who you are and vice versa versus those who seem appreciative but understand the utility of your value? It's a hard question, and I'm sorry I have to ask it, but it is one I was curious about.
I think the way I don't know if I've differentiated it. I have friends and, you know, in all these communities, and I know the people that are close to me and I know the people that are not close yet or not close. I think to me, what's important to me is I wish people asked people how they're doing. You know, and you know, like when you go to these fun parties and or dinners and things like that, which we go to too many of, but they're fun. It's like when you ask someone how they're doing, it's like they go directly to, oh, I'm working on this project, I'm doing this, I'm just tough project coming up, blah, 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 blah. Talk about work. But like, you know, whenever I'm asking someone how to do it, like, I'm not even thinking about work. I'm like, how are you actually doing? How are you feeling about this world? How are you feeling, like, as a person? And I think I wish people asked that more. I wish people asked me that more, rather than just like all the, you know, all the things that I'm doing, and that's something I've realized that I probably do also. No, not probably. I do also. And that's why when I'm at these events, I see someone like you or Tony or Eric or Abinaya or, you know, Victor or any of these people that I'm friends with, like, we try our best to put, I think once we actually realized that, like, we've been only seeing each other at events, but not one-on-one. And then at that point, we put a one-on-one dinner on the schedule. And I did that with Tony recently. I was like, Tony, actually, no, it was Tony who brought it up. He's like, I've only been seeing you at events. And, like, we have those, like, you know, a few minutes conversations about, like, the Bulls or something like that. And then I'll see you again next week or 2 weeks from now. And he's like, actually, no, let's put a dinner on the calendar. You know, we're both busy. I think, like, we had to be, like, 3 weeks in advance because, like, we're both so busy. But I think that to me, is, you know, just an example of, like, I don't know how to, I'm not sure if I've come up with an equation to differentiate it yet, but I definitely know one way to get over that at some point or now is rather people asking people how they're actually doing, like, how are you really? And not directly go into the next project or the next thing that you're talking about, the next thing you're doing at work, but really, like, how are you doing? And I've, you know, whenever I realize that, I realize that I haven't done that with my close friends. You know, whenever I've realized that, I put a time on the calendar for us to catch up over dinner or lunch, and which we've done multiple times, and, you know, all of us have done. That's when I probably pull the trigger on that.
The one thing I'd also add to what you're saying is, and I love that, by the way, and I sincerely hope people listening, like, take that to heart and do more of it. Imagine the next event, nobody's even talking about.
Right. I know.
How are you? But it's funny. It seems so simple and, like, nuanced and obvious, but, and obviously I'm at fault of this as well. I don't always do a good job at that, but it is super important. And to add to that, the other thing I would recommend is also genuinely check up on people in your circle.
Yes. Yes.
Both professionally and personally. Yes. Right. I've honestly, like, I've seen it. I've seen this come up a couple of times in different ways. Sometimes where, you know, folks will check up because they want something, you know, and listen, it's fine. Like, sometimes I might just, you know, have a quick question. And if that's the case, then just say it up front. That's sort of my formula versus, like, hey, Claude, how's it going? Hope you're doing. Hey, by the way, I need you. Like,
right, exactly.
Like, man, just hit me up because of that, or hit me up because you're genuinely checking up on me. And I think doing it consistently is important, not just when there's something you need.
Yep.
Because I feel like that sort of takes away the personal element.
100%.
So the consistent part is very important to me. And I take notice of who does it versus who doesn't and try to do that. Yeah, and there is this element of being genuine. That's kind of where I was going with the question too. To see almost, you know, what are your criterias when looking at who makes it on the Claude's friends checklist? Because I know it's probably a lot of people. But
not as many as you think.
But that's my point. I feel like people also need to understand that there are certain things that you might value that are not obvious to the first impression.
Yeah. I think self-awareness is key, and someone who communicates like an adult, like, communicates clearly. And I think those are the first two. I think the other one is recklessness, because, and I don't mean like, I mean like true reckless. I don't mean like having too many drinks and then like hungover the next day. That's just your own personal decision. I mean like true recklessness, right? Someone who's probably driving drunk, or someone who's, you know, participating in like illegal activities and things like that. You're not coming in my circle because you're bringing drama in my circle. I don't want any of that. So I think, you know, communication, self-awareness, and just someone who's after you hang out with them, you feel lighter and not heavier. And that's a fine balance, right? Because there's a couple of people I know, like, every time they call you, dude, it's like they're just like complaining. And it's like, okay, but I have my own issues too. Like I'm not your therapist. Yeah. And it's fine to call a friend if you're having a rough day. And just like, I'm fine to be that friend. But it can't be only that. And there's a couple of people that I know that like that are like that. And like, I try to stay away from these people as much as possible.
Because you're like a sponge, right? I mean, misery loves company. And one of the things my grandma used to always tell me is, don't air your dirty laundry on the street. You know, meaning, to your point, it's okay to come to friends and family with challenges, like real challenges that you need help with.
Right.
But there's also a difference of calling every single day and almost sucking positive energy out of people who you know. It's not fair to them.
Right.
Right?
It's not.
I think that's where you're going with it.
For sure. And it's not one of those things where, like, I know toxic positivity is a thing, too.
That's
like,
also, yeah.
You know, everything's butterflies. But no, that's not what I'm saying. It's like, yes, I understand my friends may be running into issues and they're having a tough time. I have tough times sometimes, and people do. Like, every human, if you're living on this planet, you're going to have tough times, right? But you can't only be calling when that, because now it's a pattern, right? It's like, okay, like that, you're officially known as that person. You don't want to be known as that person. So I think that's really, those are it. And I think lastly, I've already said it. I think communication is key. Just like communicate, Like, people do not know how to communicate clearly and concise as adults. I feel like it's something that's like an epidemic. I'm very grateful. Everyone that I consider to be a friend communicates clearly. And I have strong self-awareness. So I think those are the things I'd focus on.
Third thing that I really admire about our friendship is this sort of... This certainty that you have around the things that seem to come from the personal but trickle into the professional. What we talked about, family, the other is religion.
Yeah.
And you put that out there. It's not right. Like, you know, it's yeah. Something hidden. It's on your Twitter, it's on your IG feed. Yeah. And it's something you talk a lot about. And I always, dude, I really admire this quality in people when they're so certain in whatever gives them value, because that value trickles into positivity for other people, and because they're so sure of it, it doesn't waver regardless of who's around them. How important has your religious beliefs been for your professional career and just you as an yeah. as a man?
I think I'm a Christian. I grew up Christian, and like literally both my parents are pastors also, so it's like it's not like a double PK. I think to the core of it, the world is a very uncertain place. It's a very unpredictable place. And like especially now with like, because you get to tap into news of everywhere all at once. So like, I'm in Chicago now, but I know, you know, if there's something happening in Japan or South Africa or Lebanon, I know it immediately. So it's like all of the world's information can be consumed all at once. And you realize how crazy the world truly is. And I think personally, like, I think it plays a role into my life, of like joy into my life and not happiness. I think joy and happiness are two very different things, right? Joy, happiness is like, I have this chocolate cake. It makes me happy for 5 or 10 minutes. So like there's kind of this thermostat that goes up and down based on outside circumstance. Whereas joy, I think, is internal, of like, no matter how wild this world truly gets, I have the assurance in God that it's all going to be okay. Even my own personal life, even when things are not looking good. And it's not like you're not afraid, you're not terrified, you're not petrified. Like, of course, you have all these feelings. Like, you're not... like you're still a human being and have emotional feelings, and those feelings are still going to be there. But I think for me personally, it has played a role into like you know, no matter how crazy this world gets, pandemics, wars, and things like that, hopefully we're approaching the end of the pandemic. The world is bigger than just myself. And also I, you know, get to live a life where hopefully I can help people, you know, whenever I can. So yeah, I think for me, it comes down to kind of like internal peace and internal joy that I don't think the world, anything in this world can provide. I think the world provide happiness, but internal joy and internal peace, I'm not sure where someone can buy that. If you know somewhere, let me know.
Yeah, let us both know.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is this, and I've heard this from a lot of people who are religious. I think it provides that comfort, right? But also maybe, especially maybe in the startup space, a bit of humility in knowing that there's a being, a power that, or energy, whatever you want to define it, that's much larger than yourself, you know, and that you can point to in terms of tenets, and to you, that's Christianity. To someone listening, it could be something different. But in terms of giving you a pathway to live justly as a good citizen.
Right, right, exactly.
Right, just a bit of direction, I feel like.
Just a decent human being.
Yeah, which is seldom hard to come up. I mean, it's true, right? It feels like it's something that's it should be pretty straightforward, but...
And also, on the other side of that, you know, we all have faults, like, right? Like, it's not like I have faults and I have, like, we have to realize, like, everyone has faults on this planet. And that doesn't mean I don't make mistakes. That doesn't mean that I'm like, I'm perfect. I'm not in any way possible. It just, you know, I think that it's just good to have that kind of direction in life, or know where you're going and why you're here. So it's kind of like what I think motivates me the most. And community also, like, I don't know, church is fun.
There's something said about being together, right? Right. And vocalizing something together, singing something together, that energy. I mean, this is why we all love concerts, or why we all go and see a sports event. Not to really compare the two in a simplistic way. Sure. The one thing I wanted to touch on too was, I felt like, you know, getting to know your story a bit better, one of the things I appreciated was knowing that you didn't really have a very conventional path.
No.
Right. So for folks who might not know, you know, for you, it was high school and then career. You decided not to go down the, you know, traditional university, post-university process. I don't think I've ever asked you genuinely, like, I guess why that was, and where does it help, or where does it make things more challenging today?
Well, the real answer is, I hate school. No, I'm not joking. I don't like...
It's kind of what I was expecting.
Yeah, I don't like school. It's not that I had a bad experience. It's just like, I don't enjoy the process of sitting down and like going to lectures and do it. Like, I would kill me instead of doing that. So I generally don't like it. I think the second part is I made a bet, essentially. Just like, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna try to do this company and cultivate as many relationships as possible and see where that may take me in 5-7 years. And it paid off in a lot of ways. So I think the transfer is just, I just didn't want to go to college. I just didn't want to. My parents wanted me to until I was hired at the first startup. Then I realized, like, oh, he's actually making money and things like that. So, but honestly, the simplest answer is I just didn't want to go because I don't enjoy, like, the school process. Now, what has helped me and not helped me? I think probably in my first couple jobs, people ask about... you know, people ask about, you know, like in a hiring process, like it was brought up, but I was hired regardless, so it wasn't really an issue. So I think that's the only issue I can think of. I think the other part, I don't care about college sports. So that's, I feel like if you go to college, you do care about that. And that's a part of sports that I'm missing, I guess. But beyond that, you know, I have no debt. And you know, I think I have a pretty good network. I think there's another reason why people go to college is to build a network. I feel like I have a pretty good network without it. So those are the ways I can think of. But I think the way it's been most helpful, I have zero debt, so that's been good. None of my salary goes back to the government. Well, beyond taxes. I pay my taxes. If the IRS is listening. But I don't have to give any more than that.
I hope people listening to realize that, of course, your story is unconventional, but you also had to be unconventional after high school to also get to where you are now.
Very much so.
I think that the challenge is when you want to take that step forward, i.e. not let's say go to university, but still go down the same traditional path as folks who end up in university and leave, right? Because I don't know if you're going to necessarily find the same success.
Right.
You compensated by not going to university with your time, by building a strong network, executing with experience, building up your sort of book of experience, and performing well, right? I think those things trickle over time to help sort of create that launch pad. And it's funny because sometimes you see very educated people also struggle in their career. So it's not to say that the two are necessarily, I would say, linked. Like the biggest thing I can think of in terms of asset was just learning how to work as a team.
Right.
You know, like work with other people, and also learn how to learn. I think that's really what it provided. But content-wise, nothing very specific. Like these are things I took more so from the experience versus the education.
Yeah, I think part of it also is just like I think when you're really young, as I was back then, you don't think about consequences. So you take a lot of risks. Looking back, yeah, it is kind of wild that I did that. Right? Like objectively speaking, yeah, that was not, you know, on paper, it was not the smartest decision. But now everyone's kind of saying, oh, it worked out. But I think, like, looking back, it's just like, I think it's one of those things in life that, like, works, you know, has its advantage and disadvantage is, like, thinking about consequences of actions. And I don't mean, like, reckless actions. I mean, like, starting a company and just, like, or, you know, doing, you know, something career-oriented, right? It's like we always go to why things are going to go wrong and why things may not work out. And that's a good thing to have. But at the same time, I do think it prevents us from making decisions. If I have, you know, so back then I definitely did not have that. I think now I do. I think startup world has definitely aged me a bit where if I'm working on something, I'm like, oh, you know, I got to think through all those steps and make sure that, you know, I can maximize for success. But I was not thinking like that as a late teenager. I didn't think about that. I was just doing it, see if it works out.
Well, I'm glad it panned out, man.
I was not that smart. I was just basically just make, you know, I knew what I wanted. I knew it wasn't school, so I should try literally anything else. And
Speaking of what you don't want, I had one final question for you, which is, it's kind of a two-part question. One, what is it that you're actually striving for? Let's start there. So what you actually do want is basically that part of the question.
There's so many ways this answer could go.
Whatever comes to mind.
That's a really good question. I do think I want to build things. I want to build something that's lasting. And I want to build something that, you know, that employs people and a big mission that people can rally around. I want to build something like that. And I think that helps you build wealth. And I mean rich. I don't mean money. I mean wealth or rich. Because in our society, there's a lot of changes that if you want to make You have to be in a position where you have money, both fortunately and unfortunately. There are some things, actually, there's a lot of things. Walking down the street with a sign in your hand will not accomplish. And I'm not saying it's wrong to protest. Of course, it's your right, and you should be protesting of things that you don't accept. But to have true real impact, you need money. And you need power, you need money. And in order to get to that position, you either have to own things or invest in things and or build something. So I'd love to build. And that's a reality that I've learned from a lot of close mentors of mine and a couple of, like Amanda Leonard, who's been on your podcast.
Shout out to
good friends.
Yeah.
And that's something I've learned from her and other people also. So I think for me, I want to build something, whether it's a company, probably a company.
Which is where you're at now.
Which is where I'm at now. I want to solve a problem, and then we can go from there when it comes to, building enough wealth to have a true impact on things that I want to have impact on. Like, the fact that I think less than 3% of venture capital money are still going to Black founders is insane. Women founders are not getting funded. Black women founders are not getting funded. If you look at the senior leadership at the big companies, or even any company for that matter, barely have any women representation. If you go down to like Black representation, that's a whole other issue. I think there's a lot of things that I want to have impact on that you just need money and power to do. And I want to own a soccer team. That's like my ultimate dream.
Which one?
Look, ideally it would be a European team, but those are like a couple billion at least.
Let's go.
But an MLS team, I'd be down for an MLS team. Chicago Fire, if I still live in Chicago by then, I would love to buy Chicago Fire. Because I grew up playing soccer. It's a big part of my life, big part of my identity. So it would be great to own a soccer team. Or on part of an NBA team. That would be fun too. I'm a big Bulls fan, for those listening. Nice. Go Bulls. We're playing tomorrow against the Bucks. It's win or go home for us. That's a whole other discussion. But would love to own part of an NBA team someday, if possible.
Well, we're almost up at the hour, by the way. How are you feeling so far?
I feel good.
Do you feel better than when you first started?
Yeah, for sure.
I told you. I mean, an hour goes by quick.
Right,
Jacob, you called it too. Shout out to Jacob.
Yeah, shout out to Jacob. I just met Jacob. Shout out to Jacob.
Yeah, he's the man. He's helping piece this all together for us. A lot of people in the community who know you know you're a Meek Mill fan. Why are you laughing?
Let's go. I knew there was going to be a Meek Mill question here somewhere.
Well, it was also in that Twitter thread that I posted.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to go there, dude, because I feel like we're going to open a very big can of worms. But what I wanted to ask is, people know that he's your favorite artist and rapper, right?
Right.
Okay, that aside. And I know that more intimately too. What I wanted to ask is, who's your favorite entrepreneur?
Oh, man, we got to talk about Meek, bro.
We talk about Meek?
We got to talk about Meek.
What do you want to talk about?
I think, like, his music has had, and I'll answer your question. I know I'm not dodging it. I think his music has had so much influence over my life in a sense that, tracking his story, there's a lot I can relate to, right? Like, fortunately, I can't relate to any other legal troubles that he was in and things like that, so I'm grateful for that. But, coming from poverty and doing all the things that he's doing now, and just seeing his transition, I could probably started listening to Meek in like 2013, right? So it was like right after Dreams and Nightmares dropped, like his like first, one of his first major albums. Seeing him transition from that to where he is now, just so inspirational. Going from that kid who's rapping in the streets of Philly with his dreads all dirty, and like his consistency to the game to where he is now, and like, in 2019, I think it was, to see him going from that kid on the street rapping on the street no one cared for to rapping on the stage at the NBA All-Star game is just like tremendous to see that kind of change in someone. And I think it speaks to his hustle. It speaks to the American dream. It speaks to simply hard work on his part. And in his music, like, he really be talking about the real stuff in his music. Like, in Dreams and Nightmares, which is, like, my favorite song of all time of any artist, Dreams and Nightmares by Meek Mill. Like, when he's talking about things like, I used to pray for times like this to rhyme like this. Like, you know, it's like when you reach a point in life where you are literally living the things that you were once wishing to have or once praying to have, and now it's actually happening. It's just such a good place to be. And I've had those moments in my life where I'm at a, you know, like, whether it's, you know, I go to a lot of Bulls games and I usually sit on the floor, or like vacationing in Europe and things like that. Like, man, as a kid, like, I never had those things as a kid. And now I'm like living it on the regular, on the daily. And and like, so whenever he's talking about those things in his music, which he talks about a lot, it just resonates so much with me that, yeah, I just think he's such a inspirational figure. And now all the work that he's doing now with reform and to address, justice inequities in the country. You know, he's working with Jay-Z, Michael Rubin, and other people to make that happen. I just think, like, he's just so good. And he makes good music. Like, he's able to, like, make club hits that don't have the, you know, the best lyrics to, like, but, like, you're able to turn up to them. But also, like, super lyrical music that talks about issues in society.
Right.
Like, he's both. Mm-hmm. And so all that to say, like, Meek, I think, yeah, like, someone, he's definitely, like, I had on my bucket list to see Meek Mill perform Dreams and Nightmares live, and I finally made that happen in February. I flew to Cleveland to All-Star Weekend because I knew he was going to perform at a party to see him live. Next on the bucket list, I'd love to meet him and just, like, have a conversation with him. So, all I say, that's Meek. That's the Meek chapter. Favorite entrepreneur? Man, there's so many. Oh, Mark Cuban, for sure. Mark Cuban, I'd
Mark
say.
Cuban?
Yeah, Mark Cuban.
Interesting.
Yeah, Mark Cuban.
Why is
So, Mark...
not that it's not shocking, but I just...
Right. So, Mark Cuban... So, I remember, like, this is probably a longer story, but, like, that Mark is definitely one of the first people that, learning about his story, you know, motivated me to get into tech. I remember, like, in 2012, that was like probably a year after we moved to the U.S. Like, times were rough for us financially. Like, we're broke. And I remember, like, one night just watching a documentary about him. It's called Beyond the Glory with Mark Cuban. And that changed my life forever. Because I noticed, like, in the U.S., you can truly go from someone who's, like, somewhat middle class, which he was, to all the stuff that he ended up doing. Because Haiti doesn't have a caste system or anything, but the economic group you're born into is probably the one that you're going to die into also, right? So it's like, so you don't see people leveling up.
It's a bit more limiting, basically.
Very limiting. So seeing his story and the way, you know, stole his first company, Micro Solutions, I think it was called, for $6 million, and then started this other company, so for like $6 billion to Yahoo, and then he bought, like, a couple jets. He bought the Mavs. He's just, like, such a cool guy. You're just like, man, I really want to be like that guy someday. So I think Mark Cuban, for sure, is definitely a person I'd love to meet someday. So favorite entrepreneur, Mark Cuban.
Love it. Well, there you have it, folks. Claude Simeon.
Oh, man, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for doing this, actually, and congrats on the first podcast. I'm sure there will be many more to come. I appreciate you, man.
No, I appreciate you, brother. And thanks for having me. This was fun.
Likewise, both as a friend. And keep doing your thing, man. We're behind you. And we'll see you all at probably the next Chi-Tech IRL event.
Chi-Tech IRL. Let's get it.
Cheers. All right.